Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska.
But I thought it'd be a fun discussion to talk about how Greg and I use larger industries that dominate our layout versus a layout like Ken's and Joe's that have multiple industries. You know, what are the pluses and minuses? And I know, Joe, you've operated on layouts that have huge refineries or coal things, you know, that your layout is centered around maybe one single industry or two. And that we can talk about anything, but I thought that might be an interesting discussion because I think that sets a lot of layouts apart.
Yeah, I agree. That is definitely a good topic. And also, you know, when you talk about planting your layout, the different ways that you can denote where it is without getting too tied up in trying to count rivets and count pebbles in the earth to see if you're exactly perfect.
Correct. Yeah. So what do you think, Joe? What do you want to chat about?
Well, that sounds good. I can do, I have opinions about everything. You know that.
Yes, I do. So,
no, I like the idea of the difference between, like, my layout. The biggest industry I have on my layout is that American hoist, and that does not necessarily get switched every op session. And, you know, it may go several sessions between that, whereas like a coal plant or a mine or a paper plant or whatever, they're constantly making product that has to be moved. Otherwise it clogs up the prototype, right? So you've got to keep them happy with empties for the coal plants and then getting the loads out of the way. And it just kind of, it's not an overriding, but it's a consideration that somebody has to be doing that every time. Dave Voss sometimes will have a strike on his layout, a coal strike, and that shuts the whole thing down. And it takes about five or six sessions for everything to slowly grind to a halt. And then it takes five or six sessions for the railroad to get back up to speed. It's really fun.
Do you find going to a layout that is maybe dedicated around a single type of industry or a single traffic commodity, do you find that that's kind of nuanced and neat, or is that, you know, all we get to do is haul ore or coal or something? Is it kind of fun? What are your experiences on layouts that, you know, are purely, you know, Eastern coal haulers?
It's fun because it's different. Like Milt Spanton's DM&IR, I mean, you only get to operate that once a month if you're lucky. And so running those big, long trains is fun. And figuring out how to get the ore from the mine to the ship is really fun. Same thing with Dave Voss, is where you get the coal from the mines to the yard where it gets all marshaled, and then you get those coal trains off the railroad. It's fun because it's different. It's different than what I do.
I think that's an important point you make, Joel, because even if you are built around one commodity, there are, you do have other traffic that goes across there, and it might be passenger or it might be some freight. There's a guy down at Ridgedorf, Mike Ridgedorf in Chicago, big coal hauler. But there's enough other traffic there so that you have some variety. I've never been on one layout where it's strictly been one commodity back. Well, but that's a good point, Tom. Do you ever run freights up to bring stuff to the mines?
No, not I have not during a session.
Okay.
I learned from the other ore haulers that the guys who model iron ore layouts and all around here in cities that, if that did happen, if freight and things were going to the mines, they would not be in with the ore trains. They would run that separately. And I'm trying to represent that in a couple different ways, you know, parts and oversized loads being shipped, but they will be special movements. But I have not incorporated that into an operating session yet because I don't have the capacity to run much more than the ore trains. They take up all the oxygen in the room running the conveyor belt. And then Greg, what now, Greg, you're kind of a disciple of large engines. What have you learned from having a layout dedicated to basically two very large, and maybe you could tell everybody what they are?
Sure. So I model prototype freelance in the St. Louis area. And so I've got a large auto plant on my layout. I use Ford as the example or as the prototype, even though on that particular line, the Ford plant didn't exist. It was a Chrysler. It's HO scale. It's 29 feet for the auto plant. So 2 feet wide. At one point, I think the auto plant's about 4 feet deep where the cars go into the plant. And then the other major industry that Tom's referring to is I have a brewery on the layout as well. So inbound grains, et cetera, outbound beer. And that's actually what I originally started with. The OPSIG, I don't know how many years ago, there was a gentleman who had an article about the Budweiser plant out in California. And I think the same guy actually did auto plant in California. There was an article in the OPSIG magazine about how they did. And that's what I sort of based my layout on, the operation. You know, you were talking earlier about, say, one industry layouts, whether it be ore or coal. One of the things that I think when I go to somebody's layout who's more or less got a single industry, Ken is right. You know, a lot of times there might be small subsets of something. I think the layout owner has a lot less explaining to do in those. I mean, when you go to a layout like Milt's or like Tom's, I mean, it's an ore hauling layout, right? That's what you're there to do. That's what we're going to do today. And there isn't a lot of explanation, you know, and I think the plausibility rate goes way up in those. If you know, I've been to a few layouts where they haul everything from pickles to beer to, you know, track nails to, and as an operator, especially, I mean, I'm not strictly prototype operating, but as an operator, you know, the plausibility goes down and I feel like the layout operator has more explaining to do. Why am I switching 12 industry with this one particular?
So Joe, like in your era, would you consider probably Ken too, a very large freight house could take up, you know, a huge percentage of the traffic on that layout, you know, and you see some of these layouts online and social media that model something off a harbor in New York City, New Jersey, and it's all warehouse traffic. You know, is that, you know, do you feel that's a plus or that's a minus for you to go switch out one of these 1920 to 1960 era freight house?
Well, we used to do that here in the Twin Cities and at Bob Sterner's Soo Line layout. He had the 7th Street area and had the freight house. And that particular freight house had, I don't know, three or four tracks of 10 cars each. And your job was to pull the cars in the morning and then cars would trickle in and be unloaded, quote unquote. And then you had to place them as close as you could for outbound loads for loading. And there was always a Boston and Maine car on one spot that was going to Boston. And I found that fascinating. The way he worked it is there was a clerk who wrote switch lists and then the switch crews placed the cars. And, you know, there would be if there are 50 cars there, 35 of them are Soo Line cars. And so it really didn't matter where they ended up, but the other 15 were, you know, particular roads that the clerk wanted in a particular spot because they made sense for loading back to that home road. And that was really a lot of fun. And I found that fascinating. You know, there were a couple spots that demanded reefers and this kind of thing. And you imagined that the cars would be parked next to each other and they would put bridge plates down between them so you could load all three tracks at one time. And so we would go over there and it would be a 3-hour session switching that and then the other small industries that were in the area. So yeah, I think it's a huge benefit to the point where I have a 12 car freight house on my layout that's switched out. And I haven't had the heart yet to tell somebody, no, you're not switching the freight house this session. It's not being unloaded now because everybody, the guy who takes that job always wants to be involved with that switch action.
I think your point, Joe, is good. If you were building your whole layout around one facility, whether it was a Ford plant or a large freight house or a big candy plant, a Budweiser plant, operated on a layout in Colorado where you actually had a two-person crew in the Coors. It's great. But if you use the freight house as a center point of your layout, it's a name, it gives a place identity, and then you have an opportunity to continuously flow things in and out of there, which adds variety for your operational guys. But, you know, it's like there's people that just like to work yard crews, and all they want to do is switch out a big yard. And so I would imagine there's people that like to switch out one industry. And there's other people that like to take out road freight. So, but that's the fun of operations. It's the fun of the hobby, is there's so much variety to what you can do.
I liked what you said, Greg, that the plausibility rate goes up. That's a good saying. That, you know, I look at your auto facility and the investment that you put into it, I know you're all in this, because a higher percentage of layout builders and model builders would look at that and say, the amount of space you dedicated to one industry, I could put up to 30 different spurs in. And does that ever occur to you, Greg, to go like, well, if I took this out, I could have all these other things, but this is what makes my layout different. This is what I enjoy. And I, you know, the research of an auto plant, what goes in, what goes out, and working on it that way, because you've invested into that industry. And, you know, is it paying dividends? Are you learning more? Are you learning everything all the time? You know, how do you look at that every day when you work on your layout?
When you say I'm invested, you aren't kidding. If you look at the price of those Intermountain auto racks that they're coming out with, invested is a good word. I have never looked back. I've operated layouts, you know, like you're describing, where, you know, in 30 feet, somebody would try to fit two towns, right? So now your caboose is in one town and you're switching in the other town. And that's just something that's not for me. I know there are guys who are into prototype signaling, just to get off on a little bit of a tangent. And when they see someone else who's done a poor job of putting their signaling system together, and not from actual physically putting it together, but the way it works, you know, it drives them nuts. And I'm slightly the same way when I'm switching these industries. I called, I don't remember, there was a kit I had it a long time ago, the Sunkissed Fruit Exchange. It was this little mission, you know, where they gave you a little loading dock. And if you park a 50-foot boxcar next to it and you look at the cubic volume of the boxcar, it's about half of the building. So if you took everything out of the building, you could fit it into two boxes, you know, just from physical volume, just looking at it. And that sort of drives me nuts. Now, I model the mid-1980s, so, you know, I don't get the warehouse and the freight. And I understand that, you know, maybe back in the 40s and 50s, even in the 60s, you know, you had smaller shippers, right? You know, somebody would get a 40-foot boxcar. Maybe the town would get, you know, less than carload freight, et cetera. I can't do that in my era, and I don't mind so much. And you also hinted at the other thing that is interesting about having a large industry like that is you get to do more subtle things, as opposed to, you know, I'm spotting one boxcar at this industry. I'm shoving, what is it, 8, 16 boxcars into the Ford plant. And, you know, there's batteries, there's tires, there's, you know, all sorts of various things. And, you know, they got to be put in the right spot on the factory floor in order for this thing to work. So it's not like there's not an ample opportunity for switching. You can't just drag your train over there and shove it into two spurs and call it a day. Right? You've got to, you know, you've got to have the cars in the right order for the way the plant wants them. And you can, you know, I've even toyed with the idea of getting into simple things like, hey, you know what? You can't be shoving one boxcar into the plant, going back out to the main, getting the next one and shoving that in. You're going to run over somebody, right? You got to wait until shift change comes. You pull everything out and you shove everything in, and you better be done, you know, so they can start working. And so, I mean, there's subtle things like that that you can start doing that make it a lot more interesting, at least to me.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah.
Do you have hard spots, like, you know, box cars that have batteries have to go into door C, spot 4, that kind of thing?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's really cool. I really enjoy that, and it really adds to the, quote unquote, the game, if you will. And it's from my point of view as a layout operator, if I have that information on the cards, or as a layout owner, if I had that information on the cards for the crews to do, and then somebody says, I'm just going to shove them in here. It kind of irritates me because I've gone to the work of making this more of a prototypical approach or a more complicated game if you want to really make it simple. And then people just blow it off and look how fast we got it done. The point isn't speed. The point is correct. You know, have fun with it. Do it prototypically.
Yeah, those are the people. You know, I've had one or two people that have come over like that, and they've come over once.
Exactly.
And you know, that kind of gets into the tip of, you know, how many people do you want in your basement? And
yeah.
We can get off on a large tangent about that, because in designing my layout, one of the first things I looked at was, well, how big a crew do I really want? Am I one of these guys that wants to have 30 people over, or do I want to have 3 people or somewhere in between? You know, you can get a crew of, and we're lucky in the trees, you can get a crew of 10 together probably fairly easily. You start getting up into the crews like Jeff Otto required, 20 plus, and that takes a bit more dedication. But I've found if you've got a layout that takes 3 people, you know, all of a sudden now you can operate any day of the week, because it's not that hard to get that many people together. And that's, I think sometimes when people are designing their layout, they forget, you know, if I'm going to expect to have 15 people over, then you're not going to be operating any day. You're going to have to pick a schedule. You know, it's going to have to be the third Saturday of every month. And you're probably going to have to stick to that, because otherwise you're not going to be able to gather the.
I've done crew call for Rich Ramirez, and it's really hard to get people on a flexible schedule, because he, poor thing, had to work for so many years. And to try and come up with 16 guys who I thought were going to be able to handle running the railroad, oof, that got to be really difficult.
Well, I found it interesting too. I think, I don't know if it was MinRail where we were talking about, you know, they actually would rather have layouts that take 3-4 people and have 10 of those than one layout that takes 30. Because it gives you a lot more, from their scheduling point of view, it gives them a lot more flexibility.
Yep.
But back to these larger industries, do you guys, like when you go to a layout and you know this guy moves perishable, this guy moves coal, this guy's a passenger, like Mayor, for example. And I kind of appreciate, from my perspective, the nuances and the research that they've put into it. And a coal hauling railroad is like, okay, here's the car that's filled with coal. And then you have to take it over to, and I don't know what this does, but I've heard you have to take it to the washer. And then from there, it goes to the screening, and then you sort in the coal, and then you have the lump and the bit and, you know, all the different sides. And eventually all the coal cars in whatever the coal town you're in, you're hauling out 20 coal cars, you had those at one time. But when the layout owner, you're like Greg does, and what Joe, you do with your freight house, and Ken with your freight, they nuanced it to put it in certain places. And I enjoy that someone took the time to do this research and go, this has A, then B, then C has to happen before the train can leave and go to the next main yard. Is you guys find that too with layouts that are, you know, just basically, you know, a couple of commodities, but you appreciate the nuance? You guys ever experience that?
Yes. And yes, I do. Dave Voss does that. He's got the washer job. So certain coal is collected and at his marshalling yard, Peach Creek, and then is sent to the washer job up in Beaver Lick. And the coal is dumped and then sorted and comes out of the washer plant in 4 different grades. And he has different size coal on his loads and loads them accordingly, you know, with the big chunks farther away from the prep plant because the screens get bigger as, you know, you move along. And so then take out coal and, you know, big chunks, little chunks and super fines, and they are sent off to different places if they don't all go to, you know, some of it goes to the locomotive plants or locomotive coaling towers, and some of it goes directly to the tidewater to be shipped off in boats somewhere. So yeah, I really appreciate that because it, like you say, it makes the game better. It's more prototypical, however you want to put it.
And again, that goes back to what we were talking about, where they've taken the single commodity and dug deep into it so that there are so many different wrinkles that you have to understand. And I understand it as calling it a game because it is, but it's also, it adds reality. Into it. Going back to Dave Voss's washer plant, he has another coal producer in that area, and that coal producer's coal only goes certain places at certain times. You can't intermix it. And these are all things that happen in the era, in that time, And I think that's pretty neat. Whatever you do, whether you're doing one freight house or one commodity, when you've gone to the work to research that commodity and to research how the railroads operated in that time frame, then you're not just pushing cars, plastic cars around. Now you're starting to do something that is replicating history, and I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I find it when you add that detail. So since you've got a single commodity, you can afford to dig into the detail of, and when you add that detail then to the layout operations, especially like Ken mentions, when you're following the prototype, to me, it's kind of like reading a really good book, right? Some writers give you that extra contextual detail, and you feel like you're getting more of the story. Like I said earlier, it feels more plausible, and that's, now, detail just for detail's sake doesn't really do it, but you can tell when something all fits all together. And I'm moving this car over here to the washer because that's the way the prototype, that's the way it has, or whether it has to be weighed at a scale or something like that. Yeah, it's just more context for the story of what we're doing.
I think that with the NMRA, you know, we're always striving and helping others to improve their modeling, that I've come to believe that, you know, larger industries help you with your modeling. One, you have to be very selective. It's even a tighter form of picking a specific railroad, you know, the Soo Line in 1967, you know, then when you go shopping for products, this is what you can have. But when you're modeling, you know, an auto plant in the mid 80s, this is what I can only have this. And it kind of gets rid of the flotsam and jetsam and whatever. And I've seen a lot of layouts that you can tell that they built the industry after they bought the freight car or the rolling stock. You know, does that make sense? That you see, okay, he got this, and now I got to find a place for that to go. So I made a salt distributor or something, rather than you see a layout that the industry, the person researched, we're going to do, you know, passenger, we're going to do coal, we're going to do this. And then I'm buying the cars that fit my research for that. It's, you know, the cart before the horse. I can kind of tell that. I think it helps though with your modeling, because you have to be very selective. You have to be selective on your rolling stock, on, you know, possibly your motive power and how you build things. You want things to run better. Greg, you know, you have these really long cars, and so you want wider curves and wider turnout switches like that. So would you guys recommend to somebody who wanted to elevate their layout, like, okay, I'm tired with my layout, I want to go on, here's a simple way to do it: go with fewer industries that are bigger. Is that something that maybe you could, you know, somehow convince someone to do? And then maybe how would you do that?
Layout building is such a personal thing. As you were talking, it reminds me of a guy that no matter what they have on their layout for industries, you see one of every cute car that you could possibly buy, or you see a reefer train that's got 40 different billboard reefers in it. Well, that person's interest in the hobby is different, and so it's hard for me to really know how I would advise them.
But, well, maybe I'm asking that wrong. I was just saying, if they were at a level and, you know, model railroading 101, they got that figured out, they built the 4x8, they did this, how do you take, you know, you say, okay, now I'm tearing that out, I have this much space, how do I make this more plausible? And, you know, obviously ask them what they like and this, and then say, to me, it simplifies things as well. Oh, yeah. You know, I would just do these one or two things. Does that make sense?
It does. And it kind of supports going back to the one module at a time theory. Even if you're going to be building a huge layout, you start out with the idea of building one industry at a time, one commodity, one region, not try to do everything for everybody in one model railroad.
So I agree with you, Ken. And another way to go about it is to help a buddy out. So we're building Mike Lustig's layout up in Ramsey, and he's going to have it's Anoka and Elk River and staging on either end of them. And it's kind of fun to be at that stage again. We're laying track, we're putting in feeders, we're going to be putting in switch machines, all that kind of stuff that I'm essentially done with unless I get the okay from the boss to go into the next room. But, you know, getting tired of painting cars for other people and putting locomotives together and that kind of stuff, I just don't need any more power and more cars, but now I get to go over to Mike's and kind of be at stage one again. It's kind of fun. So, you know, that, and he's not going to have any big industries, but his big industries are passenger trains. And so he's going to run passenger train after passenger train.
And Tom, back to your point about the NMRA, that's the advantage. We are building a wider community. The NMRA is now using Zoom and NMRAX, and we're seeing that with our division. We have more and more people at the meetings. And now as we start to loosen up after COVID, we can take these friendships and go out and help each other with projects. And I think that's gonna help scratch that itch. Gee, I'm not satisfied with my layout. Well, so I go out now and I go help a few other people, and all of a sudden I get fired up because of something I see or do on someone else's layout. So, but that's our challenge going forward, is how we take what we've learned in the lockdown, and as we start opening up again, how do we start bringing that out to our day-to-day lives?
I think, you know, going back to your original question, would you suggest that, you know, how would you help somebody who, you know, has sort of the basic layout make this step? And I think Joe alluded to it in the fact that, you know, it's such a personal decision. You know, somebody just might like a round the circle layout that stops at 10 industries. They're all different. Each one takes a different kind of car. You know, that's fine. You know what? I probably won't come over to operate, and I don't want you giving me advice about my layout because that's what I'm doing. But, you know, go ahead, knock yourself out. But if somebody came to me and said, you know, I'm just not happy with, you know, I've got that and I'm not happy with, you know, what should I do? I would tell them, yeah, start with a single industry, because then, like you said, it limits you to, you know, this set of cars. And, you know, the single industry can be something interesting, like it can be a car float, right? If you want to model something on the shores of Michigan, you know, or even an interchange, if you do it right, if you model an interchange, take as many cars as, you know, or different types of cars as you like. I would look at one of the things that seems to have become popular over the last 10 or so years is corn syrup, right? Where you've got, you know, you're bringing in, yes, you've got 5-10 tank cars. They all look the same. They all have different grades of corn syrup. So, like, you know, Joe likes, they all require different spots because you don't want to contaminate the hoses. So there you've got something different where you come in. I've got 5 cars. I've got to switch them all in a specific order. And it takes me a lot longer than just shoving 5 cars in. I'm gone.
Do you guys feel you don't see industries that dominate a layout because people don't know about that industry? You know, we were joking earlier about Kombach's latest book about iron ore, and they've come out with some on grain. There's been some great NMRX clinics on grain and petrochemicals. And I've run into people that they don't want to model these things because it's boring, because it just looks like a unit train when actually it's not. Like you were saying, the corn syrup has been assembled from 8 or 9 different places. The grain cars have been picked up from 5 different elevators, and now you have this unit train. But it's filled with sunflowers, corn, we, you know, from the different things like that. And what I've learned about iron ore and the different grades and the, you know, and how they, you know, tested it and weighed it and did everything like that. Do you feel that, you know, people are maybe intimidated that it's just going to be, you know, too simple to just have, you know, that huge elevator or that huge freight house that just gets brown boxcars? And have you ever run into that they don't want to do it because it's just a unit train?
I think that's the fear. People, I'm delivering this commodity, and without digging into it, without knowing anything about ore, it's like, what I got? 50 ore cars. They all have ore in them. I take them from one yard to the other. How much different is that from going round and round in a circle, right? Without knowing that? But there's plenty of information out with the internet. There's just an explosion of information, and there's no end to the number of people that will give you an opinion, whether it's right or wrong, you know, but there's really not an excuse. I was corresponding with a guy, and I forget his name, in North Carolina about the auto plant was first putting that together. You know, could I have done that 30 years ago? You know, corresponding with, you know, on a daily basis. You know, and he's kind enough to send me a bunch of his paperwork, which is great. So I think they just don't date. And the other possibility is probably, I think there's a fear of missing, right? I mean, there is a lot of cool stuff out there. Yeah. And, you know, I look at those scale trends, like the flat car, the new flat car, you know, the bulkhead. And I see it on Facebook. People have got umpteen number of loads. You know, you've got the flat steel plate load, you've got the drill pipe load, you've got, you know, the gas pipe loads and all this stuff, and all that stuff looks cool. And without any kind of guard or control, you know, pretty soon you end up with, you know, one of each, right? And boy, that looks so cool. I've got to get one. And pretty soon you've got basically a circus train.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, in the past, I've heard the conversation that 20 years ago, most of our contact with the outside world was through the larger magazines. And so it was set up that if you didn't build a layout like you saw in Model Railroad or a railroad model craftsman, you weren't a good model railroader. So a lot of people kind of isolated themselves in their basement and did whatever they wanted to do. But there's so many exciting new ways to get in contact with people. There's podcasts and there's YouTube videos, there's special interest groups. Our horizons are just getting so much larger every month. And that's again, one of those that's going to make this hobby just more and more enjoyable.
I think that's a double-edged sword, though, Ken, because the problem is now I can get in contact with somebody who models West Texas in 1974, can tell me all sorts of information about, and I can also get in contact with somebody who knows everything about Tehachapi, and I can also get in contact with, you know, and I can see it, you know, whether it's on Facebook or maybe a personal page or any other social media. And it's like there's this explosion of choices now, too. So I can see all that. And now it's actually harder to make, you know, if you're going to make a decision and model one thing and try to do it well, now all of a sudden, rather than the three or four options that I might have had in 1980 by looking at the magazine, I've now got 3,000 or 4,000
right
to look at.
I don't know.
Yeah, if you have a hard time making a decision, now is not a good time to be around.
Yeah, there's everything. Yeah, I would call that like modeling, you know, I don't know what the word is, a creep or something. You know, if you're modeling a coal hauling road, but then you're looking at the beautiful double stack cars, you know, and, oh, I bought a set. Oh, no, here it comes.
Yeah, thanks.
I think we've all been there. Greg, do you feel any disadvantage to having the auto and the brewery? You know, I look at my purely dedicated ore hauling conveyor belt, and I found a way by my friendships through the NMRA to alleviate my car variety disadvantage by building other cars for prototype meets, modelers retreat, and for other people's layouts. You know, right now I'm building some flat cars because I don't need any more ore cars, but I'm doing it for other things. Do you feel any disadvantage for having that much space dedicated to the brewery complex and the auto facility?
No, I honestly have never looked back. I think you've asked me, and I know some of the other people have asked me before when they've been, I said, you know, are you happy with this layout? And I said, yeah, given the space I have and knowing what I know now, I probably would build it better, I hope. I don't think I would really change a lot to what I'm. I remember asking this. I went over to David and Linda, and they had built basically a switching layout. And I asked them, I said, because it was one of the first layouts I saw that was really, it was truly point to point. There was no like continuous run option, even if you wanted. And I asked them, I said, do you ever miss, you know, just being able to run a train and you know, watch it, you know, go from one place? And like, they're no, because I can go to, and they named off like 35 layouts where they could do something similar, right? And I think you hinted at the same thing, Tom. You know, if I want to run a large ore layout, I've got several choices in cities. If I want to do downtown industrial switching, I can go to Joe's layout, or hopefully Joe. You know, there's always that problem. But I think if you're in an operating group, it makes it a lot easier to focus, to stick to one, because you can always get your fix, if you will, of other stuff from other people. If you're a lone modeler, I think it makes it harder, because now all of a sudden you have to do everything yourself. You know, if you want to see double stacks and you're a lone modeler, guess what? You're going to have to do it yourself. That's why having friends is important. I'll tell you that.
I think that's where, like Ken talked about, the NMRA is so beneficial to get your foot in the door of other people's layout. Like Joe and I talked about in the clinic at the modelers retreat, is I'd rather have, you know, good social skills and good operations. So, you know, if you want, hey, you know, I was thinking about what ore hauling is. Come over, I'll show you. Well, I was thinking about auto. Come on over. You know, I was thinking about how do I run these freight houses. Ken will show you how his work. Yeah, I do think that you can get your fix from other people, and you can, you know, still stay true to what you're setting out to do. And I think what's helped me with the ore hauling in northern Minnesota is I have to look at this and go, would this be going on north of Duluth on this line? Would there be a window fence? No. You know, would there be pulpwood spurs? No. So it's kind of helped me eliminate a lot of those things. And if I want that, like you said, the networking through the NMRA and through the operation groups, the OPSIG and other places has allowed me to travel to Virginia, Minnesota, Virginia and Ohio to haul coal, and Western Minnesota to haul grain. So I haven't seen any disadvantage for it's helped my focus or my modeling ADHD. How about you, Ken or Joe, anything on you guys? Or
well, I particularly enjoy the opportunity to meet and know other people because I model an S scale. So if I only hung out with S scalers, it's a great group, but it's a small group. And so I enjoy it. That's why, you know, people say, well, the NMRA is all HO. Well, it's not all HO, but besides that, it's all model railroading, and I meet people, and it doesn't matter what scale they're.
I would agree with that. I was kind of got back into model railroading in 1992 and did stuff on my own for a while. Finally joined the Hennepin Overland and did work there for a while, and then I met the informal group that I'm in now. And through that group, I got into operations, and I met, you know, other people around the Twin Cities and even nationally. So that, you know, if it's really come down to, if you want to operate in the Twin Cities, you could almost operate every night. And if you want to go, you know, layouts around the country, boy, it's COVID excluded. It's pretty simple to say, hey, I want to go out to New Jersey. What's out there? Who do I talk to get out to New Jersey and go operate? There's all kinds of people. Same thing with the West Coast or the South or wherever you want to go. It's, you know, the NMRA, yes. And then just some of these informal groups that are together that, you know, there's the Twin Cities is chock full of operating layouts or just modelers if that's all you want to do.
Joe, would you consider, like, on your layout, you model these inner city alleys, you know, almost like a miniature branch line with many sidings and spurs. That's almost like one large industry.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
You know, you go in there with six cars and got to pull eight, but you're trapped in these simulated four city blocks.
Yeah, right. So in that sense, it is a large industry, and the different cars go to different spots within the industry. Now, you know, it doesn't make sense that it's one large industry because you've got a grocery dealer and Honeywell and an oil thing. But I mean, you could think of it as one large industry because you are. It's a stub end single track line with 10 or 12 industries on it. And like you say, if you go in with more than six cars, you've got a problem.
See, I see that, Ken, too, like with your, what do you call it now? The F line, that train that goes out that way. Yep. That's, you know, to me, all that is one industry. This is, you're sending someone out there and they're dedicated just to that.
Exactly. And there's a spot where additional cars get spotted on an interchange that they have to deal with. The other major line I have is a short line that goes out to a Granger railroad. And everything I have is set up exactly like you're talking about. You have one location street. Everything in the Granger town is related to Minnesota. It's a spot where you wouldn't see an auto thing. It's all very specific. And so you get the same, you get the exact tone of where it is you're going and what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's the way to look at it too. Maybe, you know, if they don't want a large industry, at least have an area where, I suppose, a switching district, you would go operate where you wouldn't have to dodge mainline trains or clear up. You know, if you're dedicated, you know, take a switch off here and then you go into service anywhere from 5 to 10 industry, that's about the same as switching a large coal mine or ore mine or the auto plant for a 19, you know, a pre-unit train era.
As a prototype historian, my interest is the, and I call it the last mile of the railroad, where the railroad interacts with customers. Everybody likes to do long trains, and I think that's great. I love it. I just happen to have a little different focus. It's similar to what Joe has. He's servicing the alleys of downtown Minneapolis, and I just happen to be servicing what the alleys became in northeast Minneapolis as we ended the First World War, and we expanded a little farther into the very same, very similar focus, a little different.
Do you guys find, like, I know Greg and Joe like specific spots that if someone had a grain terminal or a factory and they just gave, okay, these 8 boxcars go in, is it more enjoyable to have those spots? Like, you know, like this car's got to be third, this one second, this one third. As an operator, do you find that more enjoyable to the game that we play with this, the operation?
Yes, on two levels. It makes it, it's more fun, right? Because now you've got to move the cars around, and that's why we're there, is to move cars. But it's also more prototypical, which adds more, makes it more fun. It makes it, to Ken's point, it makes you more of a historian, if you will. You're recreating the history. So yeah, it makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah, I would echo it.
So if someone wanted to do this, you would, all of you pretty much would say, why not try it? Why not dedicate, you know, a half or, you know, a third of your operation to this specific type of industry. If, yep. if you really want to do coal, here's how to go about it. If you really want to do grain, you like hoppers, you know, let's model, you know, a section of Iowa, Kansas, or whatever. And then you could probably help them find some research. So, yeah, I don't think any of us would talk someone out of it, would you? Or
no, no. I think we've all dedicated our layouts to it. So, I mean, you know, walking the walks. If someone was that interested or even expressed a little to it, I would just tell them this is what my experience has been. All the stuff we've talked about already. I don't know how to, as far as making up their mind for them, I think they'd have to themselves. And that's where it comes in. It's nice to go to someone else's layout who maybe has done that. And see what it's like and do it and operate for yourself. And then the light bulb may just go on in your head. That's probably the best way if you're really, you know, sitting down the fence about it.
You know, that Greg, you bring up a point that I'll give you a little different twist on it. We've been around the hobby a little bit longer. So we could be gatekeepers as people come into the layout or into the hobby. But rather than do that, we should be gate opener and help people discover the different parts of the hobby. I've been hearing about people that have come back into the hobby a lot because of the COVID in the last 8-9 months. And I'm interested in finding out from them what drove them out of the hobby and what brought them back. And when we talk about younger modelers, what is it that brings you in? Because I'm interested in growing the hobby. I'm interested in growing my group of friendships. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to go over and run somebody's transcontinental. I get to pull a string of double stacks or a string of coal trains from point to point. I think that'd be a lot of fun. There's a layout in Chicago where it's the Chicago Union Terminal. And all you do is the whole day is you bring in and out trains, and some are commuter trains and some are transcontinentals. And that was really interesting. It wouldn't be what I'd want to build, but that doesn't mean it's not interesting.
I think that's, you know, like Ken said, if someone comes back to the hobby after they got out because maybe it wasn't working for them and asked them that. And I would, you know, as an NMRA, if they showed up at a meeting, I would say, well, why don't you refocus on something smaller, on a smaller target? And, you know, and I think this is where dedicating to these larger industries helps instead of, you know, the old jack of all trades, instead of trying to have everything. I need an industry for a gondola, for a flat car, for this. You know, why don't you just do the grain haul? Why don't you just focus on the movement of grain out of Minneapolis to the mills, you know, the grain out of Western Minnesota to the mills of Minneapolis, St. Paul, or the iron ore hauling. And I think we've all seen at the train shows and flea markets, the sellers with tables full of everything, you know. I think Greg and I often joke about the guy who has one ore car. I think that's on our flea market bingo carters. But they've got the two passenger cars and the coal car and the double stack. And you can kind of see where their focus has been lost by either the shiny objects or, you know, they were led to believe that this is fun or that's fun. And I think, like you said, as gate openers, it's also our job to kind of steer them to modeling something that will last. You know, hey, focus it down, work on this. This is a space you have. It'll save you from buying the one of every type of car, if that makes sense, too, as part of, you know, filtering, helping them succeed in the hobby now that they've come back in.
That is such an interesting point when you say succeed in the hobby, because if you don't find ways to keep the hobby fresh and you don't find ways to have success, it's not going to drop out. And that's not good for the hobby, of course, but it's probably pretty for you.
Yeah, I think I would change succeed to flourish. You know, what's going to sustain you this time in the hobby versus the layout that has one of everything, Gruesome Casket and the Sun-Kissed Orange Plant and this and that. You know, what will help you flourish and grow and keep you fired up that I want to learn more about the freight warehouses of Minneapolis and the auto manufacturing of St. Louis? What exactly came in? Where can I go? And I think that helps when you can burrow down into two or three items. And it's just a never-ending supply of items. As Greg pointed out, we have this internet now where we can chat with people coast to coast and get immediate answers and photos and PDFs. So, you know, I don't know, Greg and Joe would, you know, Joe, you talked about you coming back in the hobby. Would you recommend something like that to them? Say, hey, this might be a better path for you.
I was just thinking about that. And I think what I would suggest, or what I suggest to people, is go get involved and go to as many layouts as you can, and either go to a work session if the host has them, and try your hand at a couple things if they'll let you, or go to as many operating sessions as you can and figure out what you like. You know, ore hauling is cool to me, but I'm not going to build that kind of layout, right? Auto plants, I've operated on a couple. They might be it for me, but I personally like either the local freight or the industrial switching, where you're taking a lot of a variety of cars and going to different industries and swapping out one or two. And you know, I wish I had more of a mainline run, but it's not really necessary for what I want to model, so I don't have it. And so the more exposure you get to different things before you dive in and spend a lot of money on, you may not enjoy. Because let's face it, model railroading is a fun hobby and that kind of stuff, but it ain't cheap like anything. And so, you know, if you want to go and buy an auto rack car, what do they cost these days? $30-$40? Shoot, a box car is $50 if you want to take a quote-unquote ready-to-run one out of the box. Well, that's just a lot of money. It's not the $5 Atherin kit days anymore.
Yeah, tell them an auto rack costs, Greg.
They're 90, Joe.
Oh, well, I'm glad that I don't model on that.
There's my 10-car train and my kids' education.
Exactly. That doesn't even get you started anymore.
You know, but, Joe, you make an interesting point, because I think, and Tom, you used the word succeeds, you know, earlier, which, you know, maybe isn't the right word, but I like that word, because I think where a lot of people fail in the hobby, in using that word, sort of, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but I think the problem a lot of times is that people don't know what they want. They don't know where they want to go. You know, what do you want out of the hobby, right? If all you want to do is weather cars and build models, basically a modeler, not necessarily a railroad modeler, you know, and that's fine. I don't have that's not a big deal. There's some really great guys that do that, but I'm interested in an operating layout, right? So I think you have to figure out, you know, Joe was saying, go to all these different layouts. And part of that is just figure out what is it that interests you? Because if you don't know that, then you're going to go down a lot of blind alleys especially on your, and when you do that, then it just gets frustrating. You know, maybe you build, hey, you know, I got the latest book from Kalmbach. I saw the split rock mining on YouTube. I'm going to build an ore hauling layout. Right. And you get 90% of the way there and you realize this doesn't float much. And that's where you go, you know what, maybe model railroading. So I think the more you figure out ahead of time, you'll be so much.
No, I think that's the way it is. Plus, you know, like we said, the money. And I've always said my most precious resource is time. And, you know, spending time modeling something that's not going to sustain you is not going to determine what floats your boat, you know, for 6 months down the road, and then you're tearing it up. You know, I just, you know, there's 6 months that are gone. Really kind of tough. I mean, it's fun creating what would I do next? And I love asking modelers that. But I think by choosing to do this, to have larger industries or larger areas such as alleys and little towns that you're off on your own, helps the modeler thrive and flourish, that they they can push things out of the way that they don't really need because of era, because of cars, because of curves, because of other things. And therefore, your money is spent on the right items to make your layout, as we talked earlier, run better and bulletproof. So I think it is an important discussion to have. I don't think, you can't force it on someone. But I always think if someone came back to the hobby, I'm like, well, try something small. Just try creating, a tank farm. Try creating a grain elevator. And here's some places where you can read on, Clark Probst, we all know him, has a 3-track grain elevator that you can switch for 2 hours. And it's an enjoyable 2 hours, correct?
I think that your point is really good. Help people find the things that are going to, and that's a challenge. If your only access is the hobby mags, you need to get out. And Joe was talking about meeting people and getting into groups, and I think that's really neat. And it's one of the things that I miss with our current lockdown is when I meet some prototype modelers meet or at the NMRA division meet. And they have questions. I always say, "Well, come on over and look at my layout. See what I've done. Learn from my mistakes. Go make new ones on your own. Don't use the old."
Yeah, I agree with you, Ken. Information is easy to get a hold of these days, and if you have the internet or go to the hobby shop, there are all kinds of good, really cool books on industries that probably would have changed what I do as far as building this model railroad. But I'm here where I am now, and I enjoy it, so I'll stick with it. But boy, if I hadn't met the group of guys that I hang out with on Monday nights when we can get together, I wouldn't have gotten to do half of the things I get to do that are the key part of the hobby for me. So I'm really pleased that I've, stumbled across these guys. And they're friends, too.
All right. I think we got that. Anybody want to say anything to wrap it up about this or, anything else on their mind that's coming up? You guys got any last comments on modeling larger industries or larger switching areas? Anything?
I got nothing.
You got nothing. I think we're all talked out. We're all preaching to the choir. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Everybody say goodbye. We got Ken and Joe and Greg. Everybody say goodbye, and then I'll stop.
Good night to everybody.
Night, everybody.
See ya.
The official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.